Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, October the 13th. We're getting a lot of rain here in North Texas again, so can I complain about the rain this week? We've had it for several days. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about one of the most important stories. It doesn't get a lot of attention other than the Supreme Court, but one of the amazing stories about what President Trump and Majority Leader McConnell are doing with the judges. It's an incredible story, and I'm going to share with you some numbers just to show you what a tremendous situation is going on. President Macron of France, all of a sudden, he's not very popular. This is the guy who a couple of years ago, he was going to be the French Obama, basically. He was going to be the French Obama, but it hasn't quite worked out that way, at least not in France. People in France are complaining that he's focusing too much on the rest of the world, too much focus on climate change, not enough focus on job creation in France. So Mr. Macron, not very popular these days. Well, the Clintons are having a little bit of problem. I think a lot of Democrats would like to see them go away, but the Clintons still want to be in there. And it's an interesting thing to me because I think what we're really seeing here is that Bill and Hillary Clinton do not know how to walk away. You know, we have a tradition in the United States that when it's over, it's over, especially if you lose the election. It's over. You just disappear. You go back home. You watch the evening news. Maybe once in a while you show up at a sporting event. Maybe once in a while you do something of a charitable nature. But you, when it's over, it's over. But nobody has apparently told that to the Clintons, and there's a very interesting article that came out today about how many Democrats don't want to be seen with her, that she's sort of like the kiss of death, particularly in competitive districts. So not a good moment for the Clintons, and frankly, they've brought it on themselves. If she had done what other people do, what Mitt Romney did in 2012, what John McCain did in 2008, you walk away. You reach a point where you say, okay, they didn't vote for me. I had my chance. I'm done. I'm going home. Look at President Bush, George W. Bush. He came home. You didn't see him again doing any politics. And I think because of that, a lot of people have grown to respect him because, they, you know, what they see is a man who had his time. You can disagree with him, but, it, you know, when it was over, it's over. He went home, and that's the end of the story. But not the Clintons. The Clintons just seem to have, they're stuck. They're stuck to the stage. And people are politely telling them to get off the stage, but no way. No way whatsoever. Well, let's talk about the big story that came out this morning in the Dallas Morning News, and that's about our friend Representative Beto O'Rourke, who is raising a lot of money, raising, in fact, an unbelievable amount of money for a campaign that very few people, I mean, I don't know of anybody who seriously thinks that he's going to win. He's down 7 to 9 points, depending on what poll you look at. 7 to 9 points at this stage of the game is a pretty big lead. And my gut feeling is that it's going to get bigger. I think by the end of the day, it'll be 10 or 11. I think I've been saying 10 points since March, and I think that's what it's going to be. But when you're talking about, let's say, 7 points, that's basically 53-46. I mean, if you look at it that way, that's a big lead in a state like Texas where you may have 6, 7, 8 million people vote in that election. So when you're down 6 to 7 or 8 points, that's a big lead. And yet he continues to get a lot of money. And I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning where I asked this very simple question. If you're a Democrat, when are you going to ask yourself, why are we spending all this money in Texas? Why are we sending all this money to Texas when we have far more competitive and far more winnable races in Nevada, Arizona? Now you've got to defend Florida. Why aren't we sending money there, where frankly the money could be more valuable? So I don't know. I keep saying that I think at the end of the day you're going to see a lot of Democrats on Election Day or the day after Election Day. I think you're going to see a lot of Democrats looking at this and saying, what were we thinking? I mean, the only person who's going to win out of this is Representative O'Rourke, who's going to have all this cash. I don't know what he's going to do with it. I suppose he's going to be flooding the television images here for the next 10, 20 days or whatever. So you're going to see Beto in just about every 30 seconds on our local TV. But that doesn't seem to be working for him. In fact, the undecideds, according to a recent article, are moving towards Senator Cruz. So, you know, money does not buy you a victory, as we've learned over the years. It's really all about ideas. And when you have ideas that are to the left of where Texas is, you're not going to win. You're not going to win, no matter how much money people are spending on you. Well, let's talk a little bit about President Trump and the judges, because I think this is one of the most amazing stories of the Trump presidency, and may very well be his true legacy. When it's all over and said done, you know, the economy is going to go up and down. There are going to be international conflicts. All of that is the name of the game. And, you know, you're going to have good days and bad days when you're president. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. But the judges is something that has a lasting legacy. And, you know, I've been following my friends over at Powerline. This is a great blog, by the way, if you don't know about it, powerlineblog.com. I mean, this is as good as any blog that there is in the United States for political commentary, and especially for judicial matters, because the three guys who run this blog are attorneys up in Minnesota. And let me just kind of read to you what they're posting here in the last 24 hours about the work that President Trump and Majority Leader McConnell, let me underline that, Majority Leader McConnell is the other person responsible for this. They have now confirmed 15 judges this week. They just got 15 in, which brings the total of judges appointed by President Trump to 84. Two on the Supreme Court, 29 on appellate judges or appellate courts, and 53 on district courts. As I'm sure you know, the way that the courts are created, or the way they're set up, you've got districts. There's so many districts, I don't know how many, but I think 15. Then you have the appellate courts, and then, of course, you have the Supreme Court. And what they're saying here at Powerline in this article that they wrote is that when this is all done, when every one of these 84 judges is in, and most of them are in already, what that means is that one out of every six federal judges in the United States will be a Trump nominee. And we're only in the second year of Trump. Imagine if he gets reelected, which I think he will be. You're talking about potentially one out of four, maybe one out of three at this pace, of judges in the judiciary who are Trump nominees or Trump judges. That is going to have a tremendous impact on the courts, the way decisions are written. When you put that many conservatives in the court, what that means is that you are increasing the likelihood that you're going to have more constitutionally oriented decisions rather than judges just, you know, writing laws or writing opinions about this or that. And I think that's a tremendous influence. You know, we talk a great deal about the economy and foreign policy, and of course, those are very important. I understand that. But when it comes to judges, the impact that President Trump is having, and again, I want to salute Majority Leader McConnell, because Trump couldn't do it by himself. He needs McConnell. I think these two men are changing the face of our judiciary. And I believe 20 years from now, 25 years from now, when people look back at this, they're going to say, That's his biggest legacy. That is his biggest legacy, what he's done to the courts. So congratulations to President Trump and Majority Leader McConnell for such an amazing work. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guerrero Harpiz. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos' schedule right there on the show information. When you see the show description right underneath that, it says Carlos Guedes schedules. Just click on that, and you'll be able to find out where he's playing just about any day of the week. We say happy number 77 to Paul Simon. We say happy number 7, Paul Simon, of course, of Simon & Garfunkel. We say happy number 76 to Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, a man who has been controversial over the years, but I still think he's been a good owner for the Cowboys. And we say number 59 to Marie Osmond. Donnie is the brother. Marie Osmond, who my generation used to watch her on TV or listen to her on the radio, but the new generation probably knows her as the pretty lady who advertises those diets on television. And she looks really good. I mean, I know she gets made up or whatever when she goes on TV, but she really looks good in those promotions that she does on TV. So happy number 59 to the lovely Donnie, or I keep saying Donnie, Marie Osmond. Donnie is the brother. I keep confusing the two, but Marie Osmond. Well, let's talk a little bit about Margaret Thatcher. She was born on this day in 1925. She was born about 100 miles north of London. Her father had a grocery, and as a young girl, young woman, she worked in the grocery store. She grew up in, I guess she would have been 16 years old, by the time World War II came around. So she grew up in that generation, which, of course, is an amazing generation, having to grow up with the fears of World War II. It seems like her childhood, her family, was pretty typical English family of that time. She went to school, she got married, she raised a family. And then in the 1960s, more into the 1970s, she got active in politics, was elected to the parliament, and began to advance in the parliament, and became, by the late 1970s, she was the leader of the Conservative Party in the UK. Now, at that time, the Conservative Party was pretty much, exhausted. They had gone from one prime minister to the other. The party was pretty much exhausted. They had nothing left in the tank. But the good news for the Conservative Party is that the Labour Party running the country wasn't doing any better. The UK, by the end of the 1970s, was known as the sick puppy of Europe. The UK economy was a total disaster. So at the end of the 1970s, in 1980, she became prime minister because her party won the election, and immediately she faced a lot of difficult times, particularly with the economy. She took charge, made some tough decisions, and things began to turn around. One of my favorite quotes from Margaret Thatcher is when a reporter says to her, "Mrs. Thatcher, are you a consensus politician?" And she says, no, I am a conviction politician." Great line. And if you look at her story, of course, that's what she was. Now, she became very popular. She was not popular at first. In fact, 80, 81, early 82, she was very unpopular, actually, because she had to make a lot of tough decisions. But eventually, she became popular during the Falkland Wars, when England and Argentina had that war. So she became very popular because of that. And then in the 1980s, her popularity stayed fairly stable. She became a partner with President Reagan in the Cold War, and they were the ones who stood up to Gorbachev. They're the ones who, when the Polish workers were striking and rebelling in the early 1980s, there she was. She was a strong supporter of that movement, just as President Reagan was. But she was always a great ally of the United States, and President Reagan and Prime Minister Thatcher were a great team, a perfect combination of people at a time when that was exactly what was needed in the West, two strong leaders, President Reagan and Prime Minister Thatcher. Wonderful lady, absolutely amazing lady. She died in 2013. I would recommend that you check out her autobiography. You can get it on Amazon or whatever. I put it in my blog if you want to check it out. It's in my blog if you want to order a copy of it. But she's just a great lady, just an absolutely wonderful lady, and someone who I believe will always be remembered as one of the best and one of the greatest prime ministers to come out of the UK. Just a great, great leader, the late Margaret Thatcher, who was born on this day in 1925. Well, thank you for listening, folks. I guess we're going to go back to the rain here. Good luck to the Milwaukee Brewers. I'm rooting for them in this baseball pro season. Bye-bye, everybody.